Hey there, welcome to this episode of Tennessee Farm to Family. Let our team of extension agents bring the farm to your family. We'll explore all things agriculture and talk about how it gets to your table, fridge, or pantry. Meet farmers, stomp out misinformation, and grab a sneak peek into agri-search and outreach efforts.
Well, thank you for joining us. We're happy to be with you today. Going to continue the conversation. And I've added my hat. Justin's got on his hat. Hey, we got Yellowstone fever, right? But we've been chatting and thought it might be interesting to share, like, how agriculture gets romanticized and influenced in culture. And we were just talking about, you know, going to Nashville and how much it's changed. And, you know, people are wanting to buy the hats and wear the boots now. And but anyway, I think it's when Yellowstone, the show, first came out, like, I was a huge fan. Like, I was thinking, okay, like, they're actually like working cattle. People are a mainstream audiences are seeing what agriculture is like. And then there were a few things like when you really know agriculture, like, hey, why aren't there any baldy calves? They got a white-faced bull out there. But anyway, so Hollywood took over in some parts of that. But yeah, what do you think the appeal is to agriculture, and why does everybody have Yellowstone fever?
I don't know. I got to get this off my chest, though, before we get going.
Yellowstone, I can see it all over your face.
Like, I was excited about it, and then we started watching episode one, and within 5 minutes, you know, they hop the fence, run out there with a calf jack, cow having a calf. They toss the calf jack on the ground. They're there for 5 seconds, and a three-month-old calf runs off. And after that, I was just like, I don't know about this. And I think they left their calf jack laying in the pasture. So I don't know. I've been kind of – I was skeptical right after that. So
one of my favorite episodes is when I think Kevin Costner, you know, his vet performed surgery on the mobile vet trailer. I was yeah, it's getting good now. Yeah.
Like when they process thousands of calves with that regular old – you know, shoot right there, no hydraulics, no nothing. I was like, I bet they were tired.
Well, I think going back to your question, who would not want to own a ranch in Montana? Who would not? I mean, me, yeah. I mean, like the conversation we had even before we started, you know, you kind of get away from town and in your own, you know, own neck of the woods. I mean, who would not want to be a large ranch owner? Mm-hmm. And to me, I think that's a draw for a lot of people. And that Absolutely. May not be folks in town, but I think that's a draw, just that mentality of having a piece of your own, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I do think part of the show, too, has shown what we're seeing in Tennessee, too, you know, land loss and kind of that urban encroachment and people coming in. So there we see it play out, you know, on the TV screen of things that we deal with every day, yes. Like land prices and people from out of state wanting to come in and change our culture and change the market value of our land and things like that. So, yeah, it's real life. I mean, a lot of it is real life, kind of what we're experiencing here.
It is. And it, I mean, that's something that we see a lot around here. I mean, we're number three in the nation for land loss, similarly to what they're experiencing in Yellowstone. The governor of California is the greatest real estate agent Tennessee has ever seen. He's probably sold more houses than anybody here in the state.
I see what you did there, Justin. Good, yeah. Good, good.
So, I mean, it's something that is, I mean, it's real. It's happening. I mean, that part is legitimate. I mean, we're seeing a lot of people moving in. And a lot of those folks are leaving these urban centers, and they, whether they watch Yellowstone or not, they want to get involved with agriculture. They want to get closer to the land, be more self-sufficient. And whether that's growing their own gardens or growing their own livestock, it's something that they're wanting to get into. And I certainly can't blame them for that. I mean, I was raised in it. I think it's a darn good way to live. But with that comes a massive learning curve. And what you see on television or what you see on YouTube or Instagram from an influencer can be so much different from what is actually real
life.
And a lot of folks get overwhelmed with that. And so a lot of the times what I see is we've got these people that have moved in from out of town. They've bought 30 acres. They want to run 30 head of cattle. And by the time that they're, you know, 2 years into it, they've got no pasture. They've got, you know, cows dying, and they should have came and saw me 2 years ago before they ever got started. So that's something that I think a lot of us sometimes see in our counties is folks jumping in with both feet and not really necessarily knowing what they're doing, thinking that they've got a pretty good idea, but reality usually tells them something different.
Yeah, right. And have y'all seen the TikTok commercial where it's a farm, it's a ranch family, and they're kind of applauding TikTok because they were a first generation ranch family, and they share, much like Yellowstone is doing on a wide audience, but they share like what ranch life is like. So it'll show them castrating bull calves. It'll show them, and they're using TikTok to do it, which, you know, I'm a kind of a generation older for that, but I mean, I get on it and see what it is, but it's a very powerful tool to kind of tell our story. So,
well, that's the same people I think that you're talking about. I've seen them and they lay it out there pretty realistically.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. If it's this, I think I won't call her name, but I think I know who that is. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. And on the backside of that, I mean, there's a lot of people out there. I mean, I don't like to use the word trust fund often, but there are what I call trust fund millennials out there that, that do have a little endless bucket of money coming to them, and they're filming their farm. They've got their cattle. They're doing it natural. They're homesteading. And then a lot of people see that and say, you know what? I'm going to get into that too. And maybe their house doesn't go for so much in California or whatever, and the dollar doesn't stretch as much. And then they get themselves into a hole. And speaking to what you were saying earlier, 30 head of cattle on 30 acres, they should have called us earlier, because I've seen that a lot. People get way ahead of it and it looks easier, and they're looking to these people on social media as the as their profits, as their go-to, when they're not really doing any research.
Yeah. But I will say, you've said you've had some good experiences too, though, as some of those people that have moved down here and that are doing
I have had good experiences. There are people that have followed the rules that started from scratch and said, okay, look, I don't have the first head of cattle.
Yeah.
Do I need to get Dexter's? I'm like, well, hang on. No, I don't know if that'll work in this area, you know, and they start from the bottom, go to the top. I have one farmer. He's at 100 head of cattle right now. He's done everything he could, and I'm proud.
Yeah.
But then you have somebody who's gone out and pulled the trigger, and they're in debt.
They're in trouble.
They're in trouble.
Yeah. I've had numerous, I've lost count of the folks that's moved in here, either from the Northeast or the West, you know, California, Oregon, Washington, places like that. And every one of them seem to have good intentions, you know, and a lot of them want to raise their family in that ag atmosphere, that farm atmosphere, which is admirable. You know, they want to get away from that, you know, city standard, you know, with their family. But, you know, it's just kind of like what you were talking about, Drew, is, you know, they want to come in. I mean, I've had them, I've got my little spiel now. I start out in the beginning, what's your goal? You know, and I had one lady, she said, well, I want cattle, hogs, chicken, sheep, goats. You know, she wanted it all. You know, but she said, I just sold my place in Washington State that was 2 acres. And she had moved here and bought 100 acres and wanted it all. And I highly encouraged her, let's start a little at a time and work our way up, you know. But I've had them come in, and like you're talking about, I mean, they went full force, didn't kind of study their lesson, and then you're out there trying to fix a train wreck.
Yeah. And I've heard the statistics, and really not to get into what we do every day, but this happens so often and so frequently that it's changed the way we do business for extension. Mm-hmm. So we've always been here with research-based information to help educate you all on, you know, how to grow things and be successful in doing that. But we were doing it with people that whose goal was to, you know, sustain a farm. Mm-hmm. And now our goal is, well, maybe they want to sustain a farm, or maybe they want to sustain their family, and it's just changed. So it's not super commercial production oriented. It's more of like, you know, 2 goats, 5 sheep, 1 milk cow, those kinds of things. And I'm thinking, do you really want to do this? Do you know how much dedication that milk cow takes?
And I think you're onto something there. There's a great distinction and a line that has to be drawn between a farm, which, as you mentioned, is commercial based. We're looking to try to make profit, versus a homestead where you're trying to support a family. And so it certainly changes up the way that we have to do our job and the way that we have to address the issues that those folks are facing, because we've got, I think, a more of a growing interest in homesteading, at least in my county and surrounding counties. And so that's something that we have to understand objectives whenever we meet with folks. And so from those that are looking at getting into farming, for certain, I know we've got extension programs such as the Farming Fundamentals course, which is excellent for beginning farmers. There's lots of resources out there through USDA and NRCS for some of those beginning farmers, and we can try to point them in that direction. And then the homesteading, that's just kind of a different thing that we're still working on.
Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I mean, it's not just transplants moving in the state that are all jumping all in ag. I mean, we have our urbanites from Nashville and Memphis that are, you know, slowly pushing out, and and they know just as less as somebody moving in. We just, I think just from a first person basis, we know the transplant when we see them because they introduce as such.
Yes.
And then sometimes with your neighbor, you're like, well, maybe he doesn't know too much about agriculture either, because I'm noticing some of his practices aren't very well.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of folks in my home county that, you know, whenever they may have inherited a farm or a farm that's been in their family for generations, they've not been involved in it. Well, they're still really essentially a beginning farmer if they're wanting to get back in and get involved with it.
Yeah,
because so many things can change from one generation to the next, whether that be things changing within the market or within production practices. And that's kind of what we're here to help get them through that and catch them back up to speed and get back into it. You know, so
I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier, too, about, you know, how agriculture gets romanticized. And, you know, I think, and even I've dealt with this, we have a row crop farm or whatever. But when you say I'm married to a farmer, they think it's like old McDonald, like you have, you know, three, you know, pigs and chickens and you're feeding every day. And
out here on a B John Deere.
Yeah, we don't know. That's not how we operate. And, you know, my husband doesn't even own overalls, you know, so it's not that iconic, you know, farm that you might see with the red barn and all that. But it is a farm. It's productive. You know, we're in it. It's a family business. It's a small business, et cetera. So it's just interesting kind of how our culture views farms and agriculture and, right, you know, shows like Yellowstone. And I was just sitting here thinking, like, we chose Yellowstone, but I think the Pioneer Woman was also, like, you know, her and Ladd out there in Oklahoma cooking and then showing their ranch and stuff. Like, it was one of the first to kind of show that side of it, too, that hit mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting.
Well, and I think, you know, back to the original thing, you know, showing Yellowstone, I think it's helped show a positive light to ag culture, even though there was a few things that might have not been accurate, you know, the 3-month-old calf being born. And I even seen one of the prequels that 1883, and they're running a set of cows by, and they all had ear tags.
Yeah. So I caught that, and my wife's like, shut up, just enjoy the show.
So, but I think it has brought, you know, some issues, you know, you like the wolves out there, you know, mm-hmm, that's predatory on the cattle. You know, fortunately, we don't deal with that here, but that's a big issue out there. Water rights is a big issue out there, you know. So I think
it might not be for long because they're getting flooded. I mean, the West Coast is getting flooded.
I think, you know, even though it's not 100% accurate, it still brings a positive spin to what life on a ranch or a farm is.
Yeah. And they had the bout with EPA and the animal rights activist, you know, she played a part and showing how all that affects our lives in agriculture. And it's a political, deal. And we just, you know, kind of have to fight it to stay in the game as best we can to keep our way of life profitable and, you know, doable, even because some of the things that have been passed with people that don't know, some legislation that's been passed has put some people out of business. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are whole farm families, industries that have left certain states because of local regulations, mm-hmm, and it just drove them out of business. And I think we're all, like, you know, pro small business, pro, you know, family farms. But when regulations and things like that get passed, it's can be devastating.
Look at the dairy industry. You know, the dairy industries, you know, from the east, the north and the east, a lot of that dairy industries moved to the southwest. Well, you think, well, why do we send a bunch of dairy cows to the desert? Well,
right,
they, you know, public moved in on them and complained about it once they moved in on them. Well, then they were forced at some point. So they think, hey, let's just, you know, go to the desert. Maybe right, folks
won't
follow
us. Yeah.
So that's a fact.
And things like that are happening everywhere. I mean, here locally, people, you know, have recently, there's been all this buzz about the chicken litter and the smell and stuff like that. And I find that sometimes that comes from the crowd who wants to praise organic farming. But then when you're spreading chicken litter, then they don't want smell in their backyard.
Yeah, they're
and that's,
yeah.
Now that's not, you know, there's obviously some people who probably have a different opinion who are also doing that. But I think you got to realize that if you're going to move out in the country and you're going to have, you know, cows and chickens and move out there and people are going to be spreading chicken litter across from your house or ejecting hog manure and stuff like that. It's not going to smell pretty all the time.
And
it's a farm.
That's a very good point. I mean, Yellowstone does do a good job of bringing up the issues that we face. I mean, regulations can be make or break to a farmer. And I'd have to put in a plug. We've got an organization in Tennessee that helps manage some of those agricultural policies, and that's Farm Bureau. They go a long way in lobbying and supporting our farmers with policy development that goes to our state legislators and then to those in Washington as well. And I mean, that's a grassroots farmer based organization, largest general agriculture organization in the world, to help support farmers and work towards common sense and understandable regulations that we can abide by yet still get our business done. And so
our policymakers
that we deal with,
or 99% probably of our policymakers, are not, you know, related into agriculture in any way. I think exactly we're fortunate right. in Tennessee compared to a lot of states, because we've got a Farm Bureau organization, mm-hmm. but we've also got a governor that was raised on a farm.
Yes.
Still lives and does a little on the farm. So I think we're fortunate here. But the majority of our policymakers don't
have
there.
A clue how we do business and what is required to do business as a farmer.
True. And I'll touch on one other thing for Yellowstone, give it a little bit of praise, even though it's not my cup of tea. But, you know, it shows if you got a farm that's been there 200 years and then you have somebody moving in who's going to build across the street from you, or somebody's going to buy this land and turn it into something else. I mean, you know, even from a subjective point of view, I don't want to look at a neighborhood across from my family farm. And well, what are you going to do to protect it? How do you keep that land? So it does touch on that. And I don't think people naturally think about that, especially when you move into a new territory. Like, did I move the right place?
Yeah.
So speak.
Do they want me here?
Yeah.
Are they as happy as I am to be here?
Right.
Maybe not.
So. And we're blessed to be in Tennessee because people are wanting to move here for a reason, you know.
Yeah.
So I think this is this is a problem that we're talking about, you know, with losing farmland and stuff like that. It's a good problem. Well, the root of the problem is probably because we live in a great state. But
yeah, and we're, you know, economically sound. I don't want to date this thing, but the governor gave his State of the State last night. And,
yeah.
You know, it seemed very, you know, robust economy and things are on the up and up. And we're happy to be here. And I will just speak to, we mentioned, you know, about extension and changing the way we do business. But, you know, some states lost that connection with their legislators that, you know, fund it. We had a speaker from out of state up in the Midwest, huge agricultural state, but they essentially have a broken extension system. And he was just in awe. He said, actually, my mouth is watering thinking about the investment that your state has made in the university and what you all do for agriculture is, you know, unmatched, really. So we are grateful for the support we have. And even though our legislators aren't maybe necessarily from the farm and probably will get further and further removed, they are still an ag-friendly for the most part, body of legislature.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
we're in good shape here. So
hope to stay that way.
Yeah, hope to stay that way. Oh, so anything else?
I think y'all got it.
We got it. Hey. And I'm game. Keep Yellowstone. I like I can wear my hat and boots out in public.
The fever is broke.
The fever is broke. All right. Well, thanks for listening. I hope we've imparted a little bit of knowledge here, and join us next time.